Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Masao. I'm a producer at Studio Cut to Bits, working on Venture to the Vile, which we just announced last week. Be sure to wishlist on Steam. And today, our guest is Rasmus Paulsen. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, Masao. Pleasure to be here. My name is Rasmus Paulsen. We go back a few years, and you know, I'm here today to talk to you about what else I do, but I guess it is, what do I actually do, right?
Yeah, so, let's start with what you do for a living.
Actually, I'm a franchise art director at IOI Studios here in Copenhagen, and I'm working on the Bond project that we're doing.
Oh, wow. That's super cool.
It is very cool. It's many years of working on Hitman, being inspired by the Bond franchise, especially the Quake era. Now is an opportunity to really dive into that and deliver on that modern, cool aesthetic and locations and fun stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really think of a studio that would be better suited to make a Bond game, really, like considering the years of Hitman.
Yeah, you know, modern agents in a modern world, of course, there's lots of obvious overlap. Yeah.
This podcast is called What Else Do You Do? So what else do you do?
Well, lots of stuff, but, you know, try and raise a family as best I can, walk the dog. I'm not right now because I'm talking to you, actually, so I got out of that one. So that was cool. What else do I do? I do a lot of 3D graphics. I do spaceship stuff quite a lot, and I think if people are familiar with who I am, that's probably where they know me from, really.
Yeah, you make these, like, super cool spaceships. Like, how did you get into that?
Well, I mean, I'm a concept artist by trade, so that's how I got started. You know, and that's about, of course, visualizing worlds and visualizing scenarios that don't exist yet, you know, inspiring the game team, the game dev team. And in there, of course, there's a lot of 3D stuff. Back in the day, it was 3D Studio Max, right? Building environments and whatnot. And I think there's sort of a structural logic to some of that, whether it be a location, a room, a bank, a street, or whatever. And then this hard surface stuff that I do. So there's sort of a mechanical, sort of engineering type approach, and then within that there's of course also an experience. So if you can make emotions from technical hard surface stuff, that's really the same whether it's for a street or a vehicle or whatever. And so the 3D part of that craft sort of was on pause for many years while I was drawing in Photoshop and painting, and then recently, a few years back, I took back up the 3D part of it because Blender was free for my aging Macintosh machine. And that's basically why I picked up Blender. And that got me back into 3D anew, so to speak.
So, okay, so you do everything in Blender, like texturing as well, or?
Right now, everything is Blender. And textures and Photoshop. I'm an old dog and I don't. So just learning Blender was enough. Thank you very much. So I do texturing.
No substance for you.
No, exactly. So but because I'm a concept artist, I'm more comfortable painting what I want than I am noding my way there, so to speak, right? So So I do texture work in Photoshop, and I paint and photo bash and all that stuff, all those tricks that we use in that particular trade. And of course, when you're used to having many, many years of painting dirt and smudge and rust and whatnot on surfaces for your concept art or concept design, that's natural to carry that over, like paint the surface on the ships. And so in that sense, the substance is completely new to me. Of course, I do shaders as well, where I need to come in to Blender and play with nodes and set up all these different aspects that you can't paint your way out of, automation and edge detection and all kinds of things like that. So I'm sure substance would be, you know, very helpful to me, but I haven't taken the time to learn it, so to speak.
Okay. Do you do any like 2D paint over after you're done, or is what you show your full 3D render?
Oh, for sure. After the fact, there is Photoshop color grading, correction, noise, whatever, lens flares. I do whole environment scenes where they need a lot of touch up from the render. And then if I do little clips and stuff, it's post-processing in DaVinci. So unsharp mask, barrel distortion, stuff like that, you know, color grading, glow, all that sort of stuff.
Okay. Why spaceships?
Spaceships is the thing, man. That's the best. I mean, like I said before, you know, I'm comfortable and very sort of used to mechanical and hard surface stuff, from environments to objects and stuff. I'm really bad at people, drawing people and humans. So I try to get to build an emotional response through mechanical design. I'm also super into cars, for instance, and that's the same thing. It's all about emotion, right? So yeah. You build something with a let's say, that has a mechanical purpose, and in and through that mechanical purpose, there's also an emotion connected to it. And then for spaceships, I mean, being an eternal fan of everything sci-fi, it's a natural space to go and relax. Actually, for me, it's like Zen, you know, muddling around with spaceship shapes and getting sort of a feel for what does this craft tell the viewer, or what does it tell me as I model it. And so it's both a way to express that emotion that I can't through characters, which would normally be what people would do, and then it's a place for relaxing in these sci-fi worlds and with these designs that I find very very pleasing just to noodle around with.
So when you're designing these spaceships, do you think about reality, like the way that spaceships should be designed in terms of, like, you know, physics and like how space works? Or is it more of a fantasy for you, and you try to make shapes that look cool?
It depends, but mostly the latter, meaning I'm, you know, a lot of the stuff I do has sort of a Star Wars theme to it, which is sort of that timeless, fun, swashbuckling science fiction vibe, which of course is all about feeling, at least way before it's about sort of realism. So it's about crafting designs that feel a certain way, and that feel menacing or feel bubbly or fun or chunky or rusty and whatever. And then sometimes I would venture into more realistic solutions, more like zero gravity and, you know, having jettison, sort of little jets everywhere to rotate around. And you know, the challenge of doing a fighter jet for a realistic zero gravity fighting is a really odd task, and that would look vastly different from what I like to do best. But I do that sometimes as well, so I sort of switch it back and forth between the more fantastical stuff and then some of that more realistic stuff. I would say though that it's probably leaning towards the fantastical more than the credible in general.
So let's pivot back to video games. Like, what do you think you get out of designing and modeling spaceships that you don't get from being an art director?
Since the games that I do take place in, let's say, something that's close to the real world, doing spaceships allow me, first and foremost, to visit a different universe and exist in. So I exist in the universe while I create what I create, right? So at work, I'm thinking Bond. And then I come home and I let the mind wander. And it's basically looking out the window, you know, I just go on a little trip and I build my spaceship. So the first thing to say is visiting a different environment and playing with a different aesthetic. That's the first thing it does. Secondly, art direction is about clarifying goals for a team, clarifying directions, inspiring them, giving them, you know, goals that are practically impossible to reach, that has a very distinct direction so that we can all venture in that direction together, right? It's very organizatorial in that sense. I'm not saying I'm very organizatorial, but in terms of the strategy for the project or what you're trying to achieve and all that stuff, it's very much PowerPoints and arguments and using logic and words and sort of presentational energy, if you will, to riling up a team. That's very heady, and it's directed externally as well. I mean, so I'm effective through building an effective team that is inspired and has a clear goal. Then I come home and I don't have to talk to anybody, and I can just fall back into myself, you know, and noodle around and basically get into a good float state, really. And that's why I'm saying, like, a lot of it is very Zen-like, because it is less, I have to be less aware. I can just flow, where at work, I have to be quite aware. Like, what are we achieving here? What's the primary goal? What's the subset of the deliveries that we have to achieve the main goal, and why? And then explain that in a way that excites people, and so on and so forth. So it's a completely different task. Of course, they're connected in the sense that it's all about aesthetics and aforementioned emotions in the audience, right? Whether you're looking at a drawing or a clip or playing an entire game, as a visual artist, it's the same sort of playing field. But the tasks that I'm tasked with are quite different in that sense. So art direction is quite different from noodling in a 3D design. So in that sense, I'm doing, at home, I'm doing similar tasks to what my team would be doing at work. You know, so I take a step down from art direction and into the zone of actually crafting these worlds rather than theorize about why we're crafting them.
How do you think this impacts you as an art director?
Good question. I've heard a lot of people say that it's important for them to have an art director that understands the craft that they're in, because it's easier to talk together, right? If the art director understands what it takes to make a certain thing or things like that, that can be quite important in communication and understanding the perspectives. Then, of course, owning the craft that led me to where I am, that I miss in that regard, that is similar to the craft that they're doing, probably makes me better able to communicate and critique and things like that. So I can probably be more precise when I talk about composition of a scenario, an object, or whatever we do, or even objects, because I'm working with composition in terms of mechanical design. Then that's sort of a universal principle that we can discuss with greater parity than you might sometimes find if an art director is no longer hands-on. You know, that's at least one angle I think would be pretty obvious. And I mean, here I'm also referencing conversations I've had with my team about that exact thing.
For sure, when you're dealing with a manager, obviously you want someone who can not just kind of intellectually understand what you're doing, but also manually understand.
Yeah,
the challenges.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people say that they feel more comfortable in that space if there's a more direct handover or more direct sort of common understanding, rather than exactly like you say, where there might be a disconnect otherwise, right? There might be exactly, you know, maybe an art director who can formulate themselves quite well in the sort of metaphysical space of theory, but maybe they wouldn't recognize to the same degree how difficult a certain thing is to do, or let's say maybe a built-in dichotomy that you're asking your team members to perform. Maybe you have a better understanding of that by being in the craft. Because oftentimes we want opposing forces to meet in through the work, right? So, you know, having meetings with the team and saying, yeah, at the one hand, it should feel like this, but also opposite because reasons. And then they go, cool, thanks, you know, Jesus. But so knowing and seeing that dichotomy from the outside makes you able to give that direction and that feedback with a sense of humor and a sense of humility for the absurdity of the ask, in a sense, right? That might be better handled because I'm closer to the craft itself.
And I'm assuming that you could probably give more precise feedback.
But that's what I think it is. I mean, so one thing is putting yourself in the shoes of the artist you're discussing things with. And therefore, because you do the same or similar tasks, you can talk at a certain detail level. Should it be required, and should there be time for that, right? But yeah, sure, I would hope so. I'm not sure. I don't feel different for doing this than I have always. I've always been doing concept art on the side and painting and building worlds in my head or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this is just another angle of that, whether it's 3D and spaceships or whether it's environments and 2D concept art, like traditional concept art. I don't think that doesn't matter to me. It's the same principles applied. So in that sense, I don't feel that there's nothing there in that journey that makes me feel like I'm different than I was 10 years ago on that front. The only difference is that I can see that my 3D stuff has made me better than I was before. And now I see myself having been stagnated from an artistic point of view personally. Mm-hmm. Where I've spent the last 10 years growing as an art director and growing in terms of presenting and logic and arguing the case for a certain aesthetic and how to support themes in a game and how to make unique visuals that are tied to gameplay and all that stuff. So I've been owning the art direction craft, but not exactly I haven't been growing in the concept art and concept design craft. I feel like there's a growth happening now, which is very interesting. Mm.
Were you a 3D artist ever, or was this something that you do? Because you were, as a concept artist, you were primarily a 2D artist, right?
Correct. Yes, I got hired as a concept artist in 2D. I remember I had an internship at IO actually back in the day. This was back in the day when 2002 or something, where the great artists were still painting on pen and paper and noodling with pencils and had, you know, really wonderful expressive energy in their art. And I came in and I did Photoshop, like learning out of the internet. And I remember painting environments and then like gray boxes, basically painting them like gray boxes and then photo bashing textures on top of the gray boxes using using Photoshop blend modes. And the guys there, they were like, haha, it's like 2D Studio Max. They were laughing at the process because they thought it was so interesting. And of course, that's, I mean, all concept artists go like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And that was back in the days when that was a method that was wasn't necessarily as widespread. So going from 2D to a three-dimensional thinking and then going into Max and then doing props and you know, back in the early days of game development, you didn't have a particular, sure, you were hired for a specific role, but in actuality, I did concept art, I did 3D props, I did texturing, I did lighting, I did level layouts, backdrops, matte paintings, cover mockups, all kinds of stuff. And of course, that was invaluable experience in me becoming an art director, and then being able to talk to a lot of different subjects, right? That was invaluable, completely amazing. But what I'm saying is, I guess that for me, 3D has always been a natural part of that toolbox and that mindset that you need to have in the game space.
Mm-hmm. Do you think newer artists that are coming into the industry don't have that kind of experience, where they basically are kind of expected to have this kind of broad skill set? Like, I feel like increasingly in AAA, like, people have very, very, like, tight niches that they're expected to deliver on.
Absolutely.
Think that's going to impact their long-term growth in the end?
Well, I mean, I think a wide skill set is always valuable, with the caveat that if you spend more time being a master of none, you know, that thing, that is a risk. And of course, because games are so complicated now, you need to be at a high level of mastery for some area. And in that sense, it makes sense to focus in. But for me, I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, for me, it's completely invaluable to have a wide range. So I would say, if you have a wide range, maybe lean into it and then become a jack of all trades, master of none. And then your mastery is all the trades. And then maybe that's an art director role at the end of that, maybe, right? If you become a more niche artist, accept that there's risk in that. There might be high specialty output rewards on that front, but at the same time, you're a saber-toothed tiger, right? And if the North American continent changes, you'll die out, right? Or at least you have to change, yeah. Right?
Because you're so specialized in being a specific type of environment that if the environment changes, it's going to be very hard to adapt.
Exactly. So again, I haven't learned substance. I don't feel like I have to, because I can paint it. If you're a substance artist and some other app comes along, then you got to learn that. I feel like in that sense, I know the foundational principles. So if I do a shader, I'm still guided by artistic knowledge gained in the forge of Photoshop and painting. Of course, a real painter would laugh at that, but it's all relative, I suppose. And with AI, and who knows how things are going to change, right? In that sense, the all-round knowledge is always a good idea, I think. But of course, I'm speaking from my perspective, so of course I would say that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is tough because, like, obviously you have to be something, very good at something, right? Because to be able to get a job in the games industry, you have to be employable.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to produce at least one thing at a professional level. And, you know, with the increase in fidelity and the increase in the complexity of the tools that are available, like, I think that that barrier of entry of, like, being able to make a professional level thing has definitely gotten higher and higher every year.
I agree. But I would say, and then I totally agree with that. And in that sense, do that, absolutely attain a high level of skill. Maybe the question is, stay curious and stay open to what other avenues you might have a tingling interest in, and then pursue them in your spare time so that you ensure that you touch other subjects. It's almost like, you know, if you interview people and you ask them what inspires you and they say games, you go, okay, maybe get a real hobby, meaning get other perspectives than the narrow ones you're at. And I think so. I mean, if another artistic avenue can present that to you and give you that wider perspective, then it's a benefit for sure.
Yeah. I remember reading an interview Hideki Anno, the director of like Evangelion and the new Godzilla and stuff. This was like in the 90s, and he was talking about how the new generation of animators, I mean, new generation, this is like 25 years ago, but animators coming up, basically they all grew up watching anime, and that's like 100% their inspiration. And he was saying how that was really like extremely limiting, you know, because the older generation didn't grow up like that, because first of all, there wasn't that much anime, you know, even the ones that were watching anime, and they were watching a lot of other things. So like their basis of inspiration was much more, much wider and less curated.
Yeah. And of course it becomes incestuous in that sense. We've laughed at that, you know, Mr. Concept Art, remember, with the jokes on the photo bashing elements from elsewhere into soldiers, cyber soldiers. That was a joke series a few years back, but also like the sort of monoculture we see out of ArtStation and stuff like that. You know, people say it feels like we're regurgitating the same ideas all over again and again and again. I think maybe what this director you're mentioning is actually talking about, it's not really, or not, now I'm guessing here, but I think it's about finding genuine inspiration. If you're just parroting things that you like, that is very close to what you want to do, then it doesn't feel unique for the audience. And but I think if you come from a different sphere into games, for instance, or if your set of inspirations are not adhering or needs more translation, maybe, then within that translation, you find true inspiration in the work, and it'll feel unique. Maybe it's not whether or not they look alike, but what's the heart, what's inside it, so to speak. Maybe that's what it's about.
We need to wrap up pretty soon, so I'm going to ask you my last question, which is, what is something you want people to about modeling?
Interesting. I'm not a good modeler. I'm not good at Blender, and I'm not a good modeler. My models are terrible, and I do mistakes all the time, and I don't understand what's going on half the time. And I'm like, I got to go on YouTube and figure out why things are inverse normals and all that stuff. I have no idea. So I'm happily not very mechanically minded from a software point of view, which allows me to relax quite a bit and not worry. And I can work really fast and just be free. Maybe that's hand in hand with that limitation of not understanding software deeply. So advice on modeling, I don't know if I can give that. There's plenty of good modelers out there that can give that. What I would say is advice on design. And that is what we talked about before. We just circle around it. Like, so true inspirations help. Having something you want to do, prove, say. So rather than just parrot, then figure out if there's something that you feel like journeying into design-wise or whatever. And then I would say, if you understand what you're trying to achieve, if it's a theme or let's say a mechanical task, what's the job of this object or device or whatever, and then start with the big picture first. Start with the big shapes and don't go into detail before you feel like you have a clear, well-organized composition of your object. And that's whether it's a weapon or a spaceship or even a castle. It's all about composition. And three dimensionals as well. So you rotate that object around, and then you experience it as it changes angles, and your perception of it will change as it rotates. So work on the big picture first, and then dive into all that stuff. So no modeling advice for me, but design advice. Does that work?
No, that's great. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for your time. And it was great catching up. And yeah, talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Masao.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.